Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, on one page, Stacks and Jacks. After now, he's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have S&P futures down 20. This is what we did yesterday morning, and we turned around and finished up. Buy the dip yesterday. That's a strategy. Doesn't matter what's going on in the world. NASDAQ futures down 50. Futures down 214. Brendan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just, I'm stunned by all the different things that are going on in the world and by the total complacency of, the investors and why, and how you listen to CNBC regarding the Fed's activities. And I don't even, I shake my head. I'm glad I'm not a concealed carry guy, because it wouldn't be concealed. I'd be like Elvis shooting the TV. It's like,
I'm shocked at that too. I thought there'd be a lot more turmoil in the market, in the markets, based on things like what's going on with COVID resurgence, with what's going on in Afghanistan. It just seems weird to me that things are so calm and that the market keeps climbing.
Well, we keep, the Fed made it to another record balance sheet last week, so I mean it doesn't hurt. I mean the money keeps coming in, and now the big thing, all the guys in the know, you know, the Steve Leisman group, and everybody goes on TV, they all know what the Fed's doing, right? I mean everybody's got it figured out, and they all got the secret. Well, you know, if they just duck in this way, and then some other guy was on there. Well, really, if they start tapering, first of all, I don't know, my English isn't the best, but the whole idea of the taper is not. Help me with this. You're one of those legal kind of guys. You got better language skills than me. If you jump somebody and you get your foot or your knee on their head, and you let up on their head a little bit, is that considered? It's like backing off of something you're doing. It's not backing off is not the verb, is it, or is it? If you're buying bonds all day, every week, and pouring money into the system, and you cut back on that a little bit, now yesterday they were saying they're going to cut back for like 4 or 5 months and go right back to doing it. This is not something, Brendan, that can go on. I mean, what are we talking about? A balance sheet of like $100 trillion 6 years from now, 7 years? I mean, this is not something that anybody does. In any sense of economic normality, I mean, it's doing something. What we're doing is so far out on the plank that, you know, I don't even know how to describe it in terms of normal English. Can you? I mean,
no, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. It's not realistic. It's not even logical what they're doing.
I mean, I guess if you put somebody in stocks and you kept throwing rotten tomatoes at them, is stop? I guess stopping's a verb. If you only start hit them with 10 tomatoes an hour instead of 20, I guess. But what you're doing is still happening. You're still whacking them with the tomatoes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't, and I'm kind of stunned at the investment populace, you know, of which, I don't know, I have all kinds of clients, but I don't understand how people are not setting themselves up. And yesterday's a perfect day of that. No matter what the news is, We come right back. I mean, I don't know who's buying. I mean, I don't know if it's the Fed's buying, but clearly there's money. You know, last week we're up to, I'll dig this up, but we're up to, we start talking $8-10 billion a day. The money has to go somewhere, Brendan, right? And,
mm-hmm.
And it ends up at the end of the day, even no matter what the world looks like, somebody says, well, I got this money on my desk. I have to put it in the market because, by the way, I mean, I put money to work yesterday for people. I mean, it just, that's what they want you to do. They don't want to be in any cash. At least I protect the stuff with puts and stuff for some people. A lot of people don't want to be protected, but some do. I mean, but it's, I don't get how, I mean, we have, maybe people don't want to have managed money right now, which is what I do. You know that. I mean, and I specialize in doing hedge stuff where, you know, depending on what customer I decide, you know, we do stuff that, if market were to go down, you're in less risk. Okay.
You're protected to a certain extent.
To whatever extent you feel you need to be. I mean, we can either mm-hmm. totally balance, you know, mm-hmm. tie you up or
which
not.
Which is prudent, which is a prudent investment strategy. You want to make sure that the highs aren't too high, but the lows aren't too low.
Well, but then again, if you're doing your son's portfolio, and he's 22, and he's putting in 100 hours a week, you don't really need protecting, right? I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't have a whole lot of accounts like that. I have people that are more, you know, retired, are, you know, they're you know, middle age at least, but I have some young people. But what I'm saying is we have a system here, right? But now that the rage is to have to use a zero brokerage firm or a cheap firm and do the trading yourself electronically and essentially have a passive stuff and listen to people on TV to tell you to buy stocks that are 500 earnings, and that's what you buy. I mean, that's been the drill. But the interesting part is we have, you know, at my firm, I guess I have a shameless plug, which I never do, we have a terrific online system at PTI Pro Direct. And you can come and use that, and nobody will bother you. You can do it yourself. IB has probably the best system. And, oh, by the way, well, I haven't used all the others, so I shouldn't say the best, but they have a very good system. And when it comes to, when the day comes where they do pay interest, they historically have paid better interest than anybody else on your cash balances. So, and right now it's no big deal, but it could be. But the weird part of it is, Brent, if all of a sudden something breaks, everybody thinks they can get help, either for me or somebody else. No, you can't. I mean, if all of a sudden the market starts to go to hell and you need some help or you want to get protected, you can, it's probably a minimum of 2 weeks now to open up an account anywhere. I mean, for God's sake, you got to do Interpol checks on people and stuff. You can't get to someplace that fast. You think you can, but you can't. So why somebody at least doesn't set themselves up where they're at a place where if they do have a problem, they can call, like me. I can't help you if you're a Schwab or Fidelity. I mean, I wish I could, but I'm going to say, knock yourself out. I'll see you in 3 weeks. And by the way, when it gets here 3 weeks now, the last time this happened, Brandon, I had a guy came in and listened on the show. He comes in, and the guy had, this is a true story. And I never give a crummy story. The guy started out with $1.2 million on his account. He commits to a condo over on Michigan Avenue. This back, for, you know, whatever. Him and his wife, they commit to the place. Now, he hadn't given him the down payment yet. So all of a sudden, he's got all these stocks coming down. And he brings me his portfolio. And I look at it, and I mean, I've got pretty serious help here. I would never have had a portfolio that size. I mean, you can have, you know, from my days on the trading floor, you can have a portfolio, Brennan, with 30, 40 positions, but all of them can't be live. You know what I'm saying? There have to be some that are just, you put a spread on for December, you don't have to worry about that one this week, right? I mean, there's some, but you can't have, like, you know, if the market goes to hell, you can't be putting in 15 trades or managing 15 mm-hmm. live positions in one minute. I mean, I could do it because I have two or three people that I trust. Okay, you take those six, I'll take these six. We could do it. You can't do it. A, you don't have the expertise, even though you think you do. So this guy comes in and he's showing me his positions. He's got probably 20 short puts positions, a few covered rights, which the, you know, he wrote calls that were like 50 cents on stocks that were 60 bucks, so that's not helping you. And he's just got other stocks that are going down. He goes, what do I do? I said, first of all, I think you're debit right now. He started the day at like 200 grand in his account, and we were down, you know, some huge number on that day. I said, I don't think you have any money. I said, I can't help you. it felt awful. But so the guy, I don't know whatever happened to him, but he hadn't told his wife that he lost all that dough, and the closing on the condo was about 3 days away, and that was going to be his down payment. I don't know what happened to him. You know, I'm not saying I don't want to know, but I would have liked to know, but I don't see how the hell he got himself out of it. All I know is I couldn't help him. But now, you know, if he'd have been here, you know, in some shape, I could have. But anyway, enough of that. But I mean, I think people have to anticipate just a little bit. And you get these people that say these stocks, you know, they can go down 5%. God, Brendan, I don't want to name names, but I could name you about 10 of them right now. They could be down 70%, and I wouldn't even think they were a buy. I mean, some of these stocks are. I mean, they're crazed. And who's the guy? What does Reddit do, Mitty?
It's a social media platform to a certain extent where people form groups, kind of like those old chat room groups. And so there's, you know, different groups, and people go on and post things and are experts in a particular group. So you might have a golf.
Self-proclaimed experts.
Yeah, right. You might. They're experts to the extent that they talk about the same thing every day.
Is it?
So they might have a golf group, and they might have a, you know, a trading. You know, we know about the Wall Street bets guys. Yeah. So that's what it is.
Is your girlfriend in there? What's her name? Paige something something.
Paige Sporanic.
Yeah.
The model / golfer. I don't know what she's into. I doubt she's Reddit is not is more of the guys in the basement type folks.
Well, because she can't put a picture on it, she doesn't want it, right?
That's her thing. She's a model.
Well, I don't know what she is, but she's whatever. She's a
image and likeness. You can't mess around with the name, image, and likeness of something like that.
That's right.
The reason why I pick up that name is not because every time you see her, she's in some bizarre outfit, and has the body to fill it. By the way, but. Where she got married recently, Brendan, and her quote was, the first thing she did, her philosophy on marriage, first thing she did was throw out all the guy's clothes and all his, like, personal stuff, like his aftershave and everything. She's going to change it all. And I'm thinking...
So she's going to make a changeover on him?
Yeah. That always works, right?
Well, that's when you get married, except to change the person you're marrying.
Well, plus guys change so easily anyway, right? <It's> like, yeah, we'll change that guy.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with this scenario?
Yeah, I know. Name me a guy you ever know that's changed. That you knew from like eighth grade or something.
For the better or for the worse?
Well, sometimes for the worse, I think. But I mean, most guys, you swear they're the same person they were when they were 12. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's good or bad, Betty, but it's... Anyway, the Fed balance sheet last week, we're up to our last blush is $8.257 trillion. So last week, we poured in $22 billion. So if you wonder where some of the money's coming from, Brendan, there it is. And we keep
talking... Well, what about the savings that are going to be recouped by not having a war in Afghanistan? Think of the trillions of dollars that now can be diverted back to the home economy.
Boy, do you think would all the people that have been paying for their medical stuff and artificial arms and legs and stuff? Do you think we're ever going to get down to zero there?
No, we won't get down to zero, but there definitely will, you know. I mean, I was reading an article not too long ago about one of the differences between China and the United States right now is the amount of money that China can invest in its economy and in its growth because they're not involved in any wars. You know, you think about what the United States has done militarily around the world over the last 50 years and the amount of money that we've spent on military, not for defense of our country ostensibly, but in wars like Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. And, you know, equal amounts of money are plowed into the Chinese economy by the Chinese government because they're not fighting wars.
This reminds me of where's all the money that we are supposed to make on the lottery?
Mm-hmm.
When we pull a whole bunch of people
out. Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. All the money the whole purpose of the lottery originally was to fund education in the state of Illinois, that there was going to be so much of an excess of money that would solve all the debt problems of school districts around the state. How did that work out?
Not so hot. Just saying. I don't. The idea that we're saving money. The Brendan, you think? You know, you and I are getting to be grumpy and old guys. But would you like to see a study of who the hell got all this money for 20 years?
I sure would.
You think you'll ever see it? I'm thinking no.
No, and I can remember back in the early 2000s when, you know, any company that was affiliated with Dick Cheney, Halliburton, for example, got a lot of money for a lot of years, coincidentally.
You know the city of Chicago probably better than I do. And I was telling a story the other day, but a client came in and he was telling me, what are you doing in this business, basically? He said, why don't you just use some connections, get yourself like the lunch at the jail or something, or the breakfast or whatever the hell it is, the laundry service. Get some contract somewhere with the city or county or state, and you never have to worry about anything ever again. It just doesn't matter what the contract is, something you may not even think of. And you'll do well. Mm-hmm. You'll do well for life. And
well, that certainly worked well with the concession stands of places like Midway and O'Hare. The problem with that is that it's a risk right now as to whether, certainly if you're dealing with the state, whether you'll even get paid, even if you're on paper making a lot of money, whether you will ever get paid because of the backlog in payments that are due from the state.
Well, if you have the right guys behind you, which of course it takes in the first place to get this. There are two or three people, and I'm not positive who the third one is, but I think a couple of the names that you would recognize, you certainly would. There's only like two or three outfits, for lack of a better term, that are approved to do factoring for the state.
Yep.
And when I say this, listeners, you've probably heard of it, even though you probably forgot about it. A lot of firms, when they have, it used to be, what was it, Brendan? It was what, 2%, 10, net 60 or something like that. Well, which means you could take 2% off your bill if you paid within 10 days. Otherwise, you had like 60 days to pay. Or sometimes it was 30 days for regular for 1% or something, 90. Some places gave you 90 days to pay, right, or 60. And so the point was, if you had 50 really good customers that all you knew you were going to get paid in 60 days, and they always paid on the last day, because you should. I mean, if you got 60 days to pay and you're worried about money management and there's interest costs like there normally is, or let's say historically has been, then you should wait till the last day, right? I mean, what that person could do is go to the bank and say, okay, well, I just billed these 10 people. They're all, you know, solid firms. And we're going to, I'd like to factor the receivables. And the bank would say, okay. Well, now the bank gets, they get the receivable, not you. So
they get the full payment.
They get the full payment. But the bank says to you, okay, we'll give you the money, essentially today. For like a slight discount, the discount being the interest rate they're charging you. So the discounts, If the discount is, say, the interest rate's 8% and you're going to get 90 days, they're going to charge you 2% less and they're going to pay you today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would think that with the state paying people, you know, 6 months, 10 months, 2 months, 12 months out, that the a lot of people would be doing that. You know, the problem is the state will not assign their bill to anybody else except for these two or three firms. And I think the deal is, Brendan, if it goes over a year, the state starts paying like 12% interest on what they owe you.
So it's not even that long. It's more like 60 or 90 days. There's a period that's much shorter than a year.
Okay, then they start paying you
a much higher interest rate where the backlog compounds almost exponentially.
So if you become one of these people, if you have a deal with the bank, because the state will assign it to you because they will eventually pay some. I'm thinking their credit is actually pretty good in that regard. So if you were one of these people that have this, quote, deal with the state, you can now go to a bank and say, I'm one of the three firms. Will you lend me the money at 6% so I can pay these people, and then I'm going to get 12% for the state, and the bank looks at you and says, looks to me like a good deal for us. How about 7% maybe? And you go, okay, I can live on the 5. And all of a sudden you put up like no dough, and you're making 5% on God knows what. It's a great deal if you can get it, Brendan. I don't know.
Sure is. Incidentally, as I recall, that's called the Prompt Payment Act of Illinois. So the idea of prompt payment, the idea is to force the state to pay its bills to pay it promptly, even if they can't pay within the 30 or 60 days, that within a couple months after that, the punitive interest rate is such that the state will be forced to or want to pay its bills. They don't, and it compounds in a much more readily system, which hurts. Yeah, if you're not in a factoring system, it hurts the guy who's supplying the widgets to the state because they're not getting paid for a year or two or 3 years. But if you are one of the factors, you're getting a lot of money in return for doing nothing, as you just pointed out.
Well, if you ever drive around, walk around, whatever you do in the city, dodge bullets. If you ever do that and you come to a corner and you say, wow, there's a CVS. The next corner, wow, there's a Walgreens. And you say, boy, wasn't that Weber's Pharmacy at one time? And wasn't that, you know,
yep.
Brendan's drugstore? The reason why you don't see that is because those people can't afford the float and when the state pays them.
Nope.
The state has made, has essentially driven every small pharmacy out of business. Isn't that a fair statement?
There was a time when every small business owner wanted to have a deal with the state or the city or the county because they could guarantee a cash flow and they knew that the county or the state or the city was good for the money because they could raise taxes to pay their bills. Those days are long gone, and in fact, it's a detriment now to have a contract, some kind of personal services contract or services for goods with any of those entities because the payment is so long, you just can't subsist on in between payments.
Well, unless you're big enough. I mean, right now...
Well, no, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. No, but I'm talking about the smaller businesses can't afford to wait for a year or 2 years from the time they provide their services or their goods to get paid. They can't sustain it.
So you can have a... I'm going to estimate on this a little bit, Brennan. You probably, because this is your shtick. I'm going to say that Walgreens and CVS can go out today and get two-year paper for 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And the state's going to pay them 10 or 12 and the money that they're owed. And yet a small pharmacy, if you listen to our friend John Dyer, who's been on the show a few times, said when you go out and you buy a generic drug, the drugstore actually makes quite a bit of that money, percentage-wise. The other kind, the high-priced drugs, the drugstore makes very little in terms of percentages. In other words, I happen to know this, but like if you have one of these blood thinners that they advertise on TV all the time, well, they pay for the advertisement or whatever. They're like $500 a month, right? So, and they're not generic, they're not anything. I'm talking about Eliquis or what's the other one, Xarelto? You can get the cheap one, the rat poison, for $5 a month if you want, but that's tougher to take. But if you're on the Eliquis or Xarelto, it's $500 a month. I don't know if you know anybody who's on that stuff, Brennan. You probably do without them telling you. But so I'm going to say that the drugstore probably pays in the fours for that one. But if you get a generic for $20, I'm betting the drugstore pays $5. Now, if John Dyer was here, he'd know these numbers exactly. So if you're Weber's Pharmacy, there's no way on earth you can pony up $450 to get paid $5 a year from now. And if you go try and get the money out of a bank, it's probably going to be $6 or $7, Brendan, you think? At least?
Probably.
So it's not, but now the big company, now even though Weber has been in business forever and has never missed a payment and is the straightest man on earth, they're probably going to want a personal guarantee for that anyway, right? For him to go get that money.
Yep.
Which is going to drive
It's much riskier.
Yeah, which is going to drive his wife.
That Weber character who owns the pharmacy is a much bigger risk than Walgreens or CVS.
Well, and he walks home to the lovely bride and says, by the way, I had to sign the house over to the bank to give this guy his Eliquis, and she whaps him upside the head with a big frying pan. I mean, this thing just keeps going, right, Brennan? And yet, the whole difference is, you know, that some people are in and some people are out, which gets us back.
Well, and it's also the concept of being too big to fail. I mean, you see that in your industry all the time, that people want to go to the larger entities because they think they'll be around in 50 years, whereas Weber's Pharmacy won't be.
Well, it won't be because we're driving them out, which is, right?
The reason why it won't be is immaterial to the argument and the discussion, but yes, I mean, that's true. It's a Walmart concept. Walmart comes in and all the small stores go away in the neighborhood.
But I read I was listening to Joe Biden last night explaining why he, basically got out of Afghanistan. And if you just take it face value, he says, we haven't been successful, we just had to leave. You know, it's basically what he said, right? But, I saw a cartoon come flying by my desk the other day. We were on the computer. It showed Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden with planes dropping bombs in Afghanistan, like doing no good. But there's people that have been had the meal contracts at, you know, the embassy, at the airport, at the base, that have had laundry contracts, you name it, that have made a fortune for 20 years.
Yeah.
And the motor pool, we think that's all like our guys, but they're not. They're private people, right? We have all these private people that are doing
most of those are private contractors that are commissioned out
to
procurement with the federal government.
Not to mention, you know, the bullets and the Humvees and all the other stuff. So every time there's a war, and, you know, we talk about this, Brendan, probably more so than most, because you and I are Vietnam, vintage. And you know, as my mother's cousin told me then, in every war, the same group of people make an awful lot of money, and the same group of people, their kids die. I mean, in World War II, there was a pretty big crossover. I mean, a lot of rich people's kids died as pilots and other stuff. I mean, it wasn't like they didn't help. They sure as hell did. But most wars are really not like that. And now, how many people under the age of 35 even give a crap about Afghanistan? It wasn't like, I mean, there are some people. I mean, if you go running on the lakefront, you see somebody, you know, banging along without a leg, first of all, your heart goes out to them, and secondly, they were probably in Afghanistan, right? Maybe Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you really, what percentage of young people in the city here do you think served in either one of those places? It can't be 5%. It's probably 2 or 3.
No, I think, also we're now in a volunteer army and have been for a number of years, which also is unlike the Vietnam era when guys were drafted.
Right, but you have, in some parts of probably even Illinois, but I know when I haven't gone with it, I was at a COVID in a while, but when I go to see my relatives in Columbus, and of course I'm the first one up, I grab the paper and start reading the Columbus paper, all they're talking about, well, not all they're talking about, but on the first page, like every time, there's some unit, well, this is when we were in Iraq, too.
Being deployed
from, you know, the Steubenville, Ohio, Army, whatever, the mechanics thing or something. You know, and where you don't see that in Chicago. I mean, it happens in Illinois, but so many states are all into this National Guard and all this kind of stuff. These guys they were all deployed, and that's why so many small towns.
And you look at some small towns, you know, in places like Mississippi or Alabama, and the kids are now in the same unit as their fathers and their grandfathers were for generations.
Well, that's why if you blow off a bomb in one of those units, you got a town of 500 people, and you just wiped out 15 people in a 500-person town.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the equivalent of that in Chicago? 300,000 or something? I mean, this has been pretty awful, because normally those people didn't get hurt behind the lines, but these wars are not exactly lines, right?
That's right. That's right. And then you have things like the IEDs that are exploding off in roadside situations, just driving through a main town, and they're likely to get blown up in a Humvee.
Well, Brendan, thank you very much, buddy. Have a nice day. You in Michigan?
No, I'm here in Chicago today.
Well, then how come you're not here in the office buying us coffee? Since Maddie now lives on a street where the Dunkin' Donuts has no drive through and the street is only one lane.
That's true.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll talk at you next week. Have a nice week. S&P futures down 23 now. NASDAQ futures down 60. I'll be right back with Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Ali. Mr. Matt Weber, S&P Futures on 21 now. NASDAQ Futures on 56. So they've been kind of hanging here. They started to dip a little bit, but they came back. Dow Futures are down a little over 200, 226. Earnings stocks, we get Home Depot's down 11. Walmart had a nice beat, and they're down 205, but I mean the stocks 148. Plus, Home Depot was one of the few stocks that was up all day yesterday. It finished up like $3 or something. So everybody thought the numbers were going to be real good, and I think the numbers were pretty good. It's just not good enough, evidently. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 35.2%, so not much. FTSE up 7.1%. CAC around down 37.5. These guys were down some yesterday. They closed before we rallied up, so we're right sort of where we were yesterday morning too. Actually, maybe a little better than we were yesterday morning. So yeah, we've had odd days here the last few days. Asia, Nikkei down 98. Now they were down like almost 2% yesterday, so they did not come back. We're down 0.4%, but nowhere near as bad as yesterday. Now Shanghai, however, down 72%. And Hang Seng, which was down some yesterday, is down another 1.7% today, 435 points. China internet shares are getting whack as the regulatory stuff keeps popping up over there, but they also had, the growth numbers were nowhere near what people thought. So they're kind of getting whacked. 10-year down 3 basis points to 1.22. The bond down 2 basis points to minus 0.49. Japan just barely hanging over zero at 0.01 positive. We've got oil down 64 cents, way down to 66.65. Maybe I think this made it back up to like 72 or 3 after being down here before. We'll see if it bounces off this area again. It did last time. Brent down 49 cents, 69.02. Natural gas down 5 cents, 39. That was like 4.15. Like, that's like a 30 cent move in natural gas. It's almost 10% in like a, you know, maybe a week. That's a lot. RBOB unchanged at 219. We've got gold up almost $6, 17.95. Are we going to go through 1800, Manny? Silver up 6 cents, 23.85. Copper down 4 cents, 4.27. And we've got crypto 46,902. That's up 640. That's the Bitcoin. What do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No delays at all on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson traffic building, but no delays. Southside expressways are all quiet. Only crash in the area is out in the western suburbs in Bloomingdale. Glen Ellen Road at Army Trail Road, there is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another beautiful mid-August day. Sunshine, partly cloudy, a high of 80. Right now it is clear and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, White Sox back on track. They topped the A's last night 5-2. Cubs were blown out in Cincinnati by the Reds 14-5. Diamondbacks were off. They'll host the Phillies tonight. That's a 6:40 Arizona time first pitch. Chief.
Joel, how are you?
Doing well, Chief, on this Tuesday morning. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. How come Mr. Weber didn't say that they need the rain in Phoenix because they just cut them back 18% of their water supply from the Colorado River since they for the first time, I think they cut everybody back on their water shares from the Colorado River because it's going dry.
That's not good.
That's why you got to be long Michigan, Chief.
Yep.
The Great Lakes. That's what we got. We got more water around here than you can shake a stick at. They're too bad they're siphoning it in other places, but water, it's a commodity, right?
Oh, yeah. So the storm is going to hit Haiti like a week after an earthquake. The big guy upstairs, he likes them about as much as he does Detroit, or what?
Yeah, I mean, that in a place that could ill afford more disasters, right?
Oh, yeah. What do you make of the big comeback yesterday in the market with, you know, the bad news out of Afghanistan, which, you know, really doesn't affect the market all that much, but it just is kind of something that affects, you know, bad news never is all that good.
Yeah.
So that hits, and then all of a sudden the buy the dippers come in, and we end up on the day, and now we're kind of right where we were yesterday morning. Man, not quite as bad, because we finished
a little bit better.
I heard your
comment on that.
So we were down, what, 20 in the spoos yesterday morning, finished up 10, so now we're down 20 again, so we're actually, if we scratch back to yesterday morning, we'd be down 10, right?
Yeah, right. I'd say, well, it's an interesting comment. I can only say that this is the first whiff of volatility we've had in quite some time. And, you know, it's been a very, you know, as you know, you follow the VIX very closely. I follow the average ranges in the S&Ps. And it's been, you know, pretty copacetic, so in steady up moves. So here you are, you're getting a whiff of volatility. Is it going to be enough to move the VIX? You can't say it's, you know, negative price action when you make a new all-time high in the S&P 500 index for the fifth time in 6 days. So, yeah, I'll reserve my comment to, yeah, volatility is, you know, perking up a little bit. You know, what does that mean? More volatility to the upside? It's very hard to, you know, determine whether or not, you know, this market is in for any kind of correction, let alone a meaningful correction. September and October historically haven't been the greatest months, but this market really doesn't seem to care. Retail earnings season's getting started. You know, it's an interesting one because of the, you know, this is when, you know, the reopening was going. Good numbers. I just think it's, you know, the reflection of this, these stocks have too big a run into the numbers. And is this just like great numbers? Because everyone was getting the hell out of their house and the lockdowns are being lifted. So interpretation right now, Walmart, good report, down a couple points. Same thing with Home Depot, that's down 11 points. So high expectations, probably expectations met, forward guidance, not exactly where they want it.
But so Joel, you've been around a while. I'm not saying you're over 25 or anything, but you've been around a while.
I got two kids over 25, Chief. Come on.
Okay, all right, there you go. If you send people like a bunch of dough that you printed off the printing press, you have, you know, you had a disease which obviously didn't help. You orchestrated, rightly or wrongly, the closing of an awful lot of competitive stores. And you sent people a bunch of dough, and people have raised prices. How the hell could the numbers at Walmart not be good, or Home Depot? Where else do you go to? I mean, here we can go to Lowe's, or we can go to Menards, and there's still a couple of private places around. But I'm going to say, in most places, you've got a big back store, and that's it. Or pretty darn, and it's got to be way worse than 18 months ago. Because if there was a mom and pop around, they're closed. I went to the outlet mall in Michigan City, yes, Sunday morning, and I'm going to say a third of the place is closed. So if I wanted to buy blue jeans there, I couldn't, you know, or a wallet. I'm not going to say I might go to the Walmart. I don't really go to Walmart. In Chicago, there aren't very many Walmarts. So, man, even if we wanted to go, where would we go? I mean, there isn't one. There's one in the city now, right, in the old Pullman plant? Or there are two? I mean, it's...
I've never seen one.
I think there's a couple on the south side.
Yeah, there's some in the suburbs, but...
But there's maybe three in the city limits now, three or four. Because they wouldn't let them in the city forever, Joel. I mean, Target was essentially handed Chicago. And one of the most amazing things never written about. But anyway, it's not worrying so much. So what do you make of, you know, the market here? What do you make of how much can the Fed continue to pour in every week? And what about Michigan football? So there you go.
Oh, boy. You covered the whole gambit there for my rap.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Transitory, Chief. It's all transitory inflation, right? And, the Fed is sticking with their stance. You're seeing inflation in a lot of things. The Fed doesn't really seem to see it. they can raise their prices. There's a point, though, when they raise their prices, that it's gonna hurt demand. Right now, people are out there buying. They haven't bought school clothes in 2 years, so they're buying 2 years of school clothes. There's a lot of demand out there. I agree with you. I mean, as far as the prices going up, as far as Michigan football goes, from what I'm reading, I'm a little bit more encouraged about the defense, the defensive line beefing up. Hopefully we have some guys that could do better than interfere on every long pass. And, I'm calling it now. We need to establish a running game, and we supposedly 300 monster at running back. We got to run the ball. 8 out of the first 11 plays. Hello, Western Michigan. We're going to run the ball. 8 out of 11 plays. We got to get back to being Michigan. We can't be these little pansies that get pushed around on the offensive defensive line. So until Harbaugh, establishes, in the trenches. I know I kind of sound like Vince Lombardi here. It's just when you get pushed up and down the field. It's hard to put a winning program together. A lot of new coaches coming in. I am somewhat optimistic, not making any predictions as yet. And before I hop, I just want a quick reminder that we're doing our educational webinar on Saturday, August 21st. It's open to everybody in the world. Go to premarketprep.com. Check it out, sign up. It's going to be a great event, and I appreciate you guys helping me out on it.
Are you one of the speakers?
Oh, hell yeah. Yep. And Dennis, who you've had on the show.
Yeah.
And I have another buddy coming in from Bright Trading to do some statistical trading, analytical trading, Chief, probability. So maybe I'll get you to speak at the next one.
I'd be happy to. What would I speak on?
You would speak on interest rates, Chief.
Right, I can speak on interest options rates. I can do options. Trading. Yeah, I can do all kinds of stuff.
Long-term investing. But... All right,
buddy.
As always, go blue. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. S&P futures down 21. NASDAQ futures still down 59. Right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel alright.
Blowing up by Stacks and Jacks. After my eyes, just met Weber on the board. SP Futures down 21, NASDAQ Futures down 61. So we're down pretty much exactly the way we were yesterday morning, but then we rallied off that yesterday. Wonderful to do that today. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. I was talking about a flashback. Did you ever see the movie The Flight of the Phoenix?
No.
The original one is a classic flick with Jimmy Stewart. It's about a plane crash in Africa and in a dust storm, and down they go, and they're stuck in the desert, and end up, one of the guys is a aircraft designer, although he doesn't tell people till later that it's model aircraft, not regular aircraft. So they decide they can fix the plane up and essentially make another plane out of the parts.
Right.
So they do this in the desert forever, and when they end up leaving, the people are strapped onto the wings, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's no inside to the thing. And they used to actually, when they evacuated people in those days, like, you know, if you're fighting in China or something and you want to get out of an area, they would actually have like three or four people strapped on each wing. And I was thinking last night as I was watching those planes leaving Kabul, I'm thinking, that's not going to work on a C-5 Galaxy. I don't think you'd want to be on the wing.
Those images yesterday of that particular scene,
yeah,
on the boat, climbing on the plane as it was going down the runway, was really unbelievable to me. Like, I'm still trying to process what that was even like.
Well, a couple of people that they admitted to got run over and killed.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you saw the picture. Apparently one guy was able to hold on until the thing got up in the air. You saw the picture of him falling off the plane.
Oh, I didn't see that. I was looking to see the guys that got run over.
No, they ran it on, I saw it, I forget where I saw it, on one of the stations last night, but someone actually literally held on, and then when it got up in the air, they showed the, they you could see the, you know, they showed them, they put a, like, they, you know, they highlight, they put a circle around,
yeah,
something. And so, there was this guy that fell off the plane. I mean, it was mind-boggling.
Well, was he 10 feet up? 100 feet up? 1,000 feet up?
It was pretty, I had to tell you something. I don't know how far up, but it was absolutely way off the ground.
Oh, so it was
off the ground.
It was more than 10 feet. It was up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely more than 10 feet. I'm sure you can find it. It was all over the news last night.
I don't imagine, did the guy like land on other people, or is he dead?
No, because it was far enough out that he landed just on the earth somewhere else, but it was far enough away from the, yeah, it was unbelievable how long the guy held on for.
Oh, God. It's just, boy,
yeah, it's horrific.
Yeah, I mean,
horrific.
It looks kind of like Saigon with bigger planes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So our intelligence said it would take 90 days for them to take over the place, and it took them 10.
I'm not, did it even take them 10? I guess maybe it took them 10.
Yeah, 10 from like the 10 from the announcement, I guess.
I think what's unbelievable is at the speed at which they just gave up. I will say the one thing that I heard yesterday in his speech was, you know, they basically just gave up. They just put their weapons down and they gave up. They didn't even fight for themselves, for their country. And I don't know, it was just amazing. The whole thing is just mind-boggling.
Did you read the CNBC article? And Manny wants to tweet it out. I don't know if I sent it to you, but I sent it to Manny and a couple of people, and it had to do with, for the last however many days, the Taliban, which you would never expect, had managed to use social media and intimidation to run into all these towns and say, we know these guys are leaving. You're either on our side or we're coming here first, or something along those lines, but a combination of some money,
yeah,
a little bribery, and then threatening. They already had the army was already out of business 10 days ago, just with threats.
Yeah.
So they took the place over go ahead.
Yeah, but that brings up the question then about why does the Taliban even have a Twitter account? They're throwing people off in this country left and right just for saying they don't agree with the vaccine, and you get thrown off of Twitter. Yet you could be the Taliban and take over a whole country and threaten to kill people, but yet there's your account, no problem. I don't understand that.
Well, I think we have, I don't want to get too crazy here, but I think we have an awful lot of companies in this country that are descendants of your friend, not your friend, the person you remember, Harold Janine. Countries are just things to deal with, are just irritants, governments and laws.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really think that our 20 biggest international companies care about the U.S.? I mean, they do to the extent that we're a big customer and they might have people here, but if we're not here, if we get a different government, if we're not here, they don't care. It's the difference. They're probably not even living here anymore. I mean, it's something we're going to have to deal with, Kenny. And to be honest with you, I don't know how to do it. I mean, you can't arrest them all. You've enabled them. It's not like there's a law against it. It's somehow or another, the direction, we can't keep going that way. But I don't know. If you ask me, give me your five steps to to change it. I mean, what do we do? I mean, I don't know. What do you do with these people?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't either. It's really mind-boggling to think of. I just don't know how you do it either. But it was when I read that story about the about how they used social media to create havoc and chaos and angst and fear and compliance. I'm sitting there scratching my head, going, "Wait, and we get thrown off Twitter for what? Saying that we don't agree with the virus or we don't agree with the vaccine? God forbid you should say that right away. You're canceled and you're thrown off Twitter as if you just killed, you know, your mother and all her sisters. It's unbelievable."
Well, I probably never told you a story, Kenny. One of my college friends, who go nameless, he was in the Army, but his son also enlisted. I mean, they grew up, obviously, an Army base kid, ended up in the Army. And, what an impressive young man. Met him quite a few years ago. Before this sort of first went over there. And his job was to go from like village to village with good cash money in his pocket and buy off these leaders. Yeah. Our side. Well, I mean, when you're doing that, I hope that you have, not him personally, but our leaders, I hope they would have the gray matter to realize that 10 years later, somebody comes in with a little bit more money, they're easily going the other way. It's not like you're buying devotion here. The idea, well, I guess they between the social media and showing up and saying, by the way, next time I come back, if anybody's fighting here, we're gonna have more people than you got fighting us. So if I were you, I wouldn't do that. They basically went around the whole country. But I mean, you do have to wonder how it could be worse than when we got there. I mean, it basically is. I know an awful lot of people made a lot of money. I don't know who they are. Nobody I know, or maybe there are some people I know. I just don't know if they had a lunch contingent in the Kabul airport. I don't know, but you probably know those kind of people, but. There's a lot of dough. I'd love to see a list of who made all the money over there.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you, CNBC, I don't see on there too much anymore, but they're absolutely convinced now that because the inflation number last month wasn't as bad as the month before, that it is in fact is transitory, so don't worry about it. I'm like, what are these people talking about?
That's the thinking at CNBC, right? That's kind of represents the mindset of the narrative that they're trying to push. I still am not in that camp. I don't see it as transitory. You know, yes, I mean, some parts that may be transitory, yes, but I don't see it as transitory at all. And I think that's part of the underlying reason that suddenly you saw this change of heart. Now, listen, we have been talking about it for 3 or 4 months, so if anyone's really surprised that the Fed finally came out and made the announcement, I guess you've been living under a rock, because there has been speculation, and we have been talking about it, and the different Fed officials have been voicing their opinion, so you could tell all along that this change was coming. I really think what's happening is that on Wednesday, tomorrow, you're going to get July FOMC minutes, and that's going to reveal the real division amongst the group. And so he was trying, they, or he, Jay Powell or the Fed, were trying to head that off at the pass and then put the story out there to create a reaction or an overreaction tomorrow when the minutes hit the tape. This way now they've controlled the narrative, and when the minutes come out tomorrow, they're going to say, see, look, we already told you this yesterday. It's not a big deal. And so it was interesting, though, to see how the market paid zero attention really yesterday, right? Okay, so they got this news. They said they're going to start the taper. They said they're going to take it over 8 to 10 months. Everybody tried to calm it down. Don't worry about it. Everything's good. And then they rallied stocks at the end of the day, because they also made it very clear that the two events are mutually exclusive. Tapering is one, but interest rate increases are a separate one, and they are mutually exclusive.
Which is absolutely wrong.
Say it again?
Which is absolutely wrong.
Well, but they told that narrative yesterday. Now, I happen to agree with you. I think that is wrong. But that was part of that narrative yesterday, that they made sure that everyone knew, you know, just because we do A doesn't mean we're doing B. And so everyone should just sit back and relax, blah, blah, blah. And I think you're right. I think rates are going to go up much sooner than 2023. But that's going to be a story for another day, right? They controlled part of the narrative yesterday. Look what the market did. It ended up, really, in the end, it was a win-win day, right? Because you said at 10:30, the Dow was off, the S&P was off, the NASDAQ, they were all getting crushed, and then suddenly the buy-the-dippers came in, and the Dow ended higher, the S&P ended higher. The NASDAQ, even though it ended at down 30 points, it was a win-win because it was down 200 earlier in the day.
Yeah.
And so that was a win, right? But I think what you're going to see happen, and you see it today, global markets are weaker, certainly. They're blaming everything but the Fed choice. They're blaming the variant. They're blaming China regulation. They're blaming Afghanistan. Today, they're blaming Afghanistan. Yesterday, when it was the hottest story of the day, no one was even talking about it on CNBC or the business, CNBC. It was a mention of it, but the focus was all on, oh, look what the Fed's going to do. Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. But today, I think it's a different story.
Well, Kenny, I think you probably went to a school that was not as politically incorrect as the one I went to, but there was a saying that said money talks and bull bleep walk, or money talks and bull bleep walks, and I'm going to say the Fed and CNBC can say whatever they want, but as long as the Fed puts $22 billion into the system last week, the market and all the other stuff is going to be wanting to go up. And they can say what they want about interest rates and that and the other thing. If all of a sudden next week, instead of being up by $22 billion, it's down, and that happens 3-4 weeks in a row, the tone change is going to be so dramatic that they can say all they want about it's not going to make a difference, they're going to be easing, and it's not going to equal interest rates. If they don't buy the bonds, who the hell is going to buy them here? Nobody else is. And if nobody buys them, they go down. And if they go down, interest rates go up, right? Where am I wrong?
Exactly. But that's going to be the conversation for next week. Right now, today, we controlled that narrative, and look what happened. Everything is calm. Nobody's getting nervous. But when that starts to happen next week, that'll be the conversation then.
Well, if they can narrate, well, I don't know, I'm being goofy here, but they can narrate all they want. But if they didn't have the $22 billion behind them, they wouldn't sound like they were right, would they?
Right.
I mean, you and I could say all we want about it's not going to rain, but if it's pouring, we're going to look like a couple idiots. So is the COVID toning down there, or are you guys under COVID watch, or what's going on?
Well, listen, apparently parts of Florida are. I'm between Palm Beach and Miami, right along the East Coast, and if I didn't read the paper or listen to everybody, I wouldn't necessarily know that there's a problem. Life down here seems very normal. People are out and about. You can't get a reservation at a restaurant, and it's still the summertime, you can't get a reservation at a restaurant. Wait till winter comes back and all the northerners come back down in terms of the activity down there. But they keep saying that it's spiraling, and I will say now that the kids have gone back to school, I am hearing people that I work with and people that my wife works with who have young kids who now have already said in the first couple of weeks of school, the first week of school, that their kid was exposed and now the kid's got to stay home for a week and blah 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 blah. But I don't hear anybody in full blown panic like we all were a year ago when there was less treatment, there was no vaccine, there was no one really knew. Now the treatments are better, the vaccine is out there, more and more people are getting the vaccine, they're going to start to get the booster. Look, this is going to be something that's going to be around for a while. I don't think this is going away anytime soon, and so we're all going to have to learn how to live with it and get along with it, the same way we learn how to live with so many other things, that affect our lives, whether it's, whether it's other contagious diseases or not, but this is not going away tomorrow at all.
There are a few people close to the show that have been vaccinated, have it, and essentially have a bad cold.
Yeah, essentially, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think, it's funny because I had it, as I get vaccinated. I kind of had a reaction to it, but, that's okay. I had my reaction to the second shot and now I'm fine. But I suspect anyone that I talk to that gets hit again with it feels like just a cold. That's right. They get wiped out for a day and a half, maybe 2 days, and then they feel better. It's going to be what it's going to be. And I'm not trying to downplay it because there are a lot of people that are very sick and, what you're learning now is that the people getting sick are people that choose not to get vaccinated, and that's fine. You can make your own decision, but you go in with your eyes open when you make the decision, so you play the game of Russian roulette. You're not going to get the vaccine. I'm not going to get sick. I'll play the game. Well, okay.
I'm kind of surprised, even though I know it was oversold, and I read how the tests were done, I'm still kind of surprised at how many people with vaccinations are getting it. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe I wished for a different outcome, but...
Right.
Anyway, thank you, Kenny. Talk at you next week, buddy. SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ is down 57. Come back, Mr. Professor Hal Snarr.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 20, NASDAQ Futures down 58. Professor, how are you?
Doing well. How you guys doing?
All right. I knew we were going to ask you on this week, and when I thought of you, and I was actually was almost going to knock and see if it was you, I drove into the Walmart. I get my oil change at the Walmart at 7 o'clock in Indiana Sunday morning, things I do it early in the morning, and I see this guy with his massive motorhome. Parked in the Walmart. Well, evidently, you can still park in the Walmart lot, right? Well, this guy's got this huge...
Great for you overnight parking.
Well, the guy's got the big slide-out windows. He's got like four of them going, so the thing looks like a house. And behind it, he's got some this gorgeous big tire four-door Jeep like Moab or something. I'm thinking, and he's towing this thing around, which is not like towing some go-kart. And I'm thinking, well, I wonder if that's Hal. But it wasn't, obviously. Where was it? I mean, I don't know.
No, we drove through Chicago last week, I think Monday and Tuesday, on our way back to Utah from our summer-long vacation in New York. But we were in a minivan. We were in our minivan.
Oh, was it tan? A tan minivan?
No, bright red. My wife doesn't like it. She hates the color red.
I bought a pickup truck, and to say that Audrey is still giving me grief this day. What do you want a red truck? Okay.
I don't know what red is an awesome color for a vehicle. I think.
Well, I don't know if I buy another one, it's going to have to be red. I mean, just to say, you know.
Yeah, well, you gotta keep that those comments coming from your wife, right?
Well, the thing is, then at least I know that she won't hit me with another subject. At least I know that'll be you know a subject for a while. So
yeah, you bludgeon with that one for. You know, for the rest of the time you own the vehicle.
Yeah, or forever. I mean, I put one of those caps on it, and of course that was red too. Now it looks even worse. There's even more red. Okay. Well. So what's up, man? Is there any shortage of PhD thesis? Or one of the gentlemen comes on Wednesday. I don't know if you ever listen to Russell Rhodes. He's finishing up his PhD.
Oh, really?
And he's just got a position with the University of Indiana on their faculty. And,
sweet.
He's doing his, what is it, Matty? It's does the volatility, the VIX and the implied volatilities, have they traditionally, predicted bigger moves. Isn't that what it is, Manny? Something like that, right?
So he's doing financial economics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I thought it was more earnings-focused.
Well, maybe it was earnings-focused. Mm-hmm. It was does the VIX predict the earnings more or something? Or volatility moves before the earnings announcements?
Yeah, essentially basing earnings estimates on stock reaction instead of analyst expectations. So right now we rely so much on the analysts sort of predicting what earnings are going to be, and then you either beat or don't beat based on analysts. He's saying let's get rid of the analyst expectations and start basing the estimates on actual stock reaction, tracking that data going back a period of time and predicting earnings based on that.
Wasn't there was some volatility kicker to it, though, wasn't there?
There is, yeah.
Because that's his basic research has been in VIX and volatility. He did a lot of that for the CBOE.
Well, I mean, if you think about what he's trying to do there, I mean, what drives the volatility, right? Does good economic news drive the volatility? Does policy drive the volatility?
Well, I mean, that's been the million-dollar question since the day we started trading options, right? I mean, what is it? I mean, mathematically, it's the whatever the standard deviation, but that's just the way to calculate it. I mean, that's not what it is. I mean,
I wonder if I lost my train of thought there for a second. It's a little early, and I just started drinking my coffee.
There you go.
But I was thinking, that was a good point too.
It'll come back. Just
it'll come back. Comes back to me. I'll make sure I pop it out.
Wherever we are, just pop it out. It's not like I don't change subjects quick enough here. Yeah. So it's not like, feel free to do the same. But if you were lobbing out theses for suggested stuff, by the way, do you sit on any of those kind of committees that Russell has where he's got to go in front of his three or four people to approve this and approve that? Do you do that for people?
We don't have a PhD program at Westminster. We have an MBA program, but yeah, we don't have a PhD program.
Okay.
It'd be fun. I'd love to do it.
Well,
I'd love to teach econometrics, but we don't have the demand for it. And, I've asked to be on people's PhD committees before, I was working with a guy at the welfare office in Washington State University. And, he was getting his PhD from Washington State, and he was working in the welfare office. And the welfare office in the state of Washington is like a PhD program. It's like, it's like a think tank. They do all kinds of research there. And I was telling him, dude, if you can give me some de-identified data for a project I want to do, we can turn it into your dissertation. And he just didn't seem very interested in it. So, that was the last time I had an opportunity to do something like that.
Well, what do you call it? I think at University of Chicago, boy, it's a long time ago. I think you could write something. What do you call a thing you write for a master's program if you wanted to? You don't have to. It's not like a...
A thesis.
They had a different name. But if I would have written something like that, I think it would have been like a, instead of being 100 pages, it was like 20 or something. It was nowhere near as long. But then if you did that and it was approved, I think you got an MBA with honors is what they did. Do you guys do that?
Well, there's master's programs with thesis option or not. And I think most programs are probably, unless it's economics, I think most programs are probably just not having a thesis option. Because a master's student probably, kind of like a buddy of mine, took every class to avoid writing papers, right? You can do that at a large university. You pick the professors to avoid writing the paper.
Well, I sure did that when you had a typewriter, and I didn't know how to type, and I have a typewriter, so.
Oh, I can imagine how bad that was. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things of today. I mean, everybody's got Word or some document editor on their phone, so writing research papers, in my opinion, has just gotten so much easier.
Well,
in the age of the internet.
Dated several young ladies that I knew, how can I say this politically correctly, that I knew was a short-term relationship because they had a typewriter and knew how to type.
Well, in high school, I think I took a research paper of mine when I was in high school back in late 80s, and I handed it over to a person who did that for a living, just typed up research papers for high school students in Lewiston, Idaho, and she typed up a great paper, and I think I ended up getting like an A- on her or something. But yeah, I handed it to her. She fixed all my typos. It went from being, because I gave her like a really rough copy, right? And she gave me back this really polished product. It was great.
Well, I don't want to embarrass him because he's on the show, but Mr. John Flanagan, I don't know if you listen to him, but John's an attorney and all that stuff, and he was a teacher at for a long time. He just retired. He was a professor, but when he was at Notre Dame, he worked for the Observer, which is a newspaper. And John was a prolific typer even then, that's what he would do. He typed for the Observer at night, so he'd be there like all night. And most of the time, he was bored stiff. So he basically said, look, give it to me. You know, he charged me like a buck a page or something. And he did it for me. And, of course, being an English major, it always came back better than it went in.
Hey, do you remember the movie You Got Mail?
Yeah.
Remember the boyfriend of Meg Ryan's character, played by Greg Kinnear or something? Greg Kinnear? He loved the typewriter. He would tell Meg Ryan's character in the movie that he just found this typewriter because he's a writer.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
He goes, oh, I know, you have eight of them.
Well, I remember the guys like Mike Royko and those dudes, the old newspaper guys.
Yeah.
They were hunting Peck. They were two fingers, and they were 75 words a minute.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, kids today with texting, right, with the thumbs?
Yeah.
They can crank them out. I watch them in class, and they're just cranking those texts out, man, with those two thumbs.
Well, I mean,
it's exactly like that.
Well, Matty, before Weber, with the manual ones, the real manual ones, you got to hit it just as hard with your little finger as you did with your forefinger. The thing looked like crap because you gave all the power to it. It wasn't.
I learned how to type on one of those.
Really?
In my keyboarding class when I was like in sixth grade.
We had IBM Selectrics, and if you want to change the font, you had to pull the ball out and put a new ball in.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that was a lot easier than the ones where it didn't erase, and if you hit it a little bit,
it didn't erase, and then the letters would be different levels of impact, like you said. So if you
and understrike really meant understrike.
Right.
Yeah. I remember the ladies when I was a kid at the food store before there even was. I mean, here's a question. I mean, I'll ask you. You're a professor like on Gilligan's Island. You're supposed to know. If all of a sudden something happened here and we had no more electricity, how long would it take somebody to reinvent the cash register or an adding machine that didn't work off electric?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a chance with that. I mean, I could stare at that thing. If you gave me the parts, I wouldn't know how to put it together.
Well, you know, I've been watching the 100 on Netflix. My favorite genre movie or Netflix series is the dystopian story of a dystopian future. And the 100 is basically kids, you know, resettling to Earth after a nuclear war. And there's technology all around them, but without electricity, you got to hunt the old-fashioned way, man.
Right.
You got to feed yourself the old-fashioned way. By the way, I love the 100. That's one of my favorites. My son and I just finished Stranger Things, but I think without electricity, it's just starting over.
I haven't seen the 100 yet. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it was originally on the CW, but man, I tell you, each season, I think it just gets better and better and better. The story gets better and better and better, and the characters get more fully developed, and I'm in season 5 now, and it's just gotten to the point where I don't want to put it down, right? But I got work to do.
What do you say? You must talk about some current events. I know with your classes, you always say you sort of try to avoid it. But what do you make of what is going on now with the long term debt situation with the Fed with this unprecedented amount of money in and sending people a check, then denying that there's inflation, even though you just sent them a check. And, oh, by the way, you got half the places closed in some areas because they didn't make it through COVID. So the other places you somehow favored, and now they're there, and they're raising prices to beat the ban. I mean, could you even name a time? I would say the Weimar Republic, but hopefully we're not that bad. That anybody's ever gotten out of something like this without being nicked?
Well, you know, I think the politicians are just so short-run focused. They're just worried about the next election. You know, and once they're out of office, I mean, who cares, right? I mean, I think they're pretty well protected. they're I mean, they feel pretty well protected. But I think it's going to hit everybody hard when it really comes. And if you look at the home, if you look at the Shiller Home Price Index, man, it's going straight up.
Yep.
I mean, it's straight up. That's where the inflation is going. I mean, you look at the economy, and it's doing all right. You know, we rebooted from a hard reboot, right? From a hard restart. But unemployment in states where they're still paying people not to work with those generous unemployment benefits, their unemployment rates are still above 7. In the states where they're not paying those extraordinary unemployment benefits, the unemployment rate is 6 or less. And the stock market is acting like we're at 3 or 4% growth, robust growth, and unemployment 3%. All that is inflation. And what the Fed's doing, what the Congress is doing, they're buying off they're paying for our inflation, or they're offsetting our inflation cost with these checks, right? My wife and I got $1,200, I think, last month. It's just an inflation offset. Meanwhile, all this money, going back to the Austrian business cycle theory, all this money is being poured down the throats of these really rich people. And, you know, the pandemic has made CEOs of pharmaceutical companies billionaires. It's made the billionaires even bigger billionaires. So that's the Fed's job, in my opinion. The Fed's job is to, you know, it uses rhetoric to say that, hey, we're trying to lift all Americans. But what it really does, whether it's intentional or not, doesn't matter. It's really driving the wedge between the really well-off and pretty much everybody else.
Well,
I think politicians, they're just worried about the next election. I mean, they're looking at 2022. That's all they're looking at.
Well, I was saying last week, I forget who the guest was, and I said, you know, if you have an economic policy that favors one group versus another, in any kind of a problem, you know, be it a panic, be it a COVID, whatever it happens to be, and you say, that was just an unintended consequence.
Well, I don't think it's unintended, man.
I honestly
don't think it's unintended anymore.
Well, I'm reaching the age where this has happened like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, I don't think it's unintended.
So I refuse to be dumb enough to think that it's still unintended. I mean, the first time I'm willing to wing him a break, but I'll say, what about this, Al? And this, well, my opinion again. You're the professor. Grade my paper. This is the first time. I mean, I guess I think politicians have always felt, maybe not individually but collectively, that the population is dumb as a rock. Collectively, in terms of them actually, they may know that people pick up on what they're doing, but they don't have the energy or the ability to organize and do anything about it. You know, I'm not talking about shooting people. I'm talking about just in general politically. I mean, you and I basically we're going to talk. I mean, I have other people on the show too. We kind of know the game, and we see who, but not enough to where we're going to, you know, peacefully get a sandwich sign and walk up and down the street, or violently, or raise enough money to actually make a stink about it on a national level. We're not going to do that, right? I don't, because maybe you have family, you know, I've got a firm to run and people's money to manage. We're not going to do that. But this is the first time that they have been smart enough where they actually treat us all like a dog. They're dropping the prime rib on the table, and they're winging the bone to my little dog Scruff when he was alive, and he's happy as a clam. He doesn't realize what we're eating up on the table. And the idea that they send people these checks, and I got to believe that even the dumbest American has to realize that the $1,200 or $2,000 or $3,000 they just got over the next 10 years, they're going to be paying back 10 times that.
Yep.
And yet, they're so happy to finally be included. You know,
I don't think they're included. They're not included. It's just an inflation offset.
Well,
that's all it is. It's just a temporary payoff.
But you mentioned the part about, you know, paying people that, you know, more than they're making at these jobs. Well, you're also talking about jobs that in 20 years have not had a raise, or if they have, they're 20% when they should be 50 or 100, just to stay even with inflation. So, you know, the idea, especially in Chicago, I don't know what's like you, the idea of calling the person up who left your restaurant last year at $10 an hour, 18 months later, where gas is up, cars have doubled, tolls are up, and saying, I got your job back at $10 and expecting the guy to be waiting for the call. What planet is that guy from? If it's not 20, don't even bother me. I mean, it probably needs to be more than that. You know,
well, if you really think about it, these inflation offsets, as I like to call them, all they really do is they just push wages up. This political party that's in favor of this stuff wants to set the minimum wage at 15. Well, there's resistance to that. They can't get it through, so why not just pay people not to work and create a labor shortage, and that will push up the wages. And, I think they're hoping that the wages are sticky and they remain up. But, markets have a tendency to work things out, and that's why we have black markets, right? Black markets are just the market system trying to free itself of the rules and regulations that the state has placed upon it, right?
Well, you and I are coming at this in two different directions. I think in a certain sense we're probably disagreeing some, but I agree with all the principles that you just talked about. Yet somehow or another, Helen, is this, if I was in your class, I'd bring this up.
Oh, yeah, I'd welcome it. I welcome discussion in class.
We're so far away from stuff being normal. When I say that, if you look at what people made in 2000 versus what they're making today, they have not kept up. I mean, you can give somebody a 20% raise from $10 to $12, and I feel like the girl in Caddyshack, tanks for nothing. I mean, I went to Walmart, of course, I changed my oil, and I walk around, and what the hell did I buy? But a hunk of cheese, two things of cream cheese for we had bagels for breakfast, and something else. It was $40.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that and you say, really? 4 hours pay for that? It's not even breakfast for five people at home. I mean, we're so far away from. I mean, the idea. I mean, I did a thing in Chicago about how much money it took if somebody gave you $5,000 for a car. I did it like a year and a half ago, and you had to go get your parking permit, your title, your paid a tax on the car. This is somebody gave you the dough and paid for the insurance. Your title, your state sticker, whatever you want to call it, it ended up being like the first 66 hours of work if you're making.
I know.
And now that car is $12,000. Nephew and niece were in an accident on the Eisenhower. Some truck, somebody pulled in front of a truck. Truck moved over. It pinned them up against the concrete. Right. Car's total. They're okay. Thank God. They bought the car, I'm going to say, a year ago. But, it's just a regular, 10-year-old whatever. I think it was a Honda or whatever it was. And they paid $6,500 for it or something. The insurance company immediately gives them $8,500. They can't touch the same year, same car for less than $12,000.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, and at the same time, people are saying, man, I gave this guy a raise from $10 to $12 an hour. Really? I mean, how many? He's going to be working there 5 years to pay for the junk to get him to work.
Well, Tom, I think what it boils down to is there's a group of Malthusian thinkers who want commerce to shrink. They just want commerce to shrink because they believe, and they're right to believe this, that they want. And fortunately for them, they make the decisions in the United States. They want to reduce commerce. And the way you reduce commerce is you slap all kinds of restrictions on it. And the reason why they want commerce to reduce because they see it as a way to curb pollution, curb CO2 emissions. So they slap all kinds of rules and regulations on the economy. And what that does is it just drives prices up to the demand curve at this new level of scarcity. And that's basically what's going on.
I don't disagree. I think that those people that go at it that way, I know the people from the right are going to blame everything on the tree huggers. The oligarchs, the Harold Janines of the world, they don't care.
They benefit from the situation.
But I may say that they'll maneuver the Democratic Party with all their weaknesses while they're in there, and then they'll maneuver the Republican Party with the, this is just real capitalism to have three firms in every industry, which it's not, by the way. It's fascism.
Yeah.
They work, both parties are equally stupid into letting. Before you came on, we were talking about the state of Illinois, how complicit they are. You can't have a small drugstore anymore because they won't pay you. And people get used to it. They look around and they say, let's see, you've got CVS, you got Walmart, and you've got the ones in the Sam's Club. By the way, Target just went CVS, didn't it, like a year ago, Maddie? Aren't they all CVS? CVS and the Targets. So they dropped out as a competitor. Walmart's still a competitor. I'm thinking
basically CVS and Walgreens in the city. That's it.
Well, yeah, Mariano's is actually a fairly strong competitor.
Yeah, but they only have what, like 5 locations in the city?
They're getting more, but I mean,
there's CVS and Walgreens on every corner.
Yeah, but I'm saying there is. I'll use the term. How's this, Carl? There's a competitive fringe.
Yeah.
Well, Walmart is in most towns, man. He's a serious competitor.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah.
Walmart is a definite competitor, right?
But there's not very many, you know. Yeah. And if you put Walmart in the, you probably, there's your big three: CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart. And maybe in some areas of the country, you got Rite Aid, right? But there's none here, are there? I don't think. Might be one or two, but once you start moving east in Ohio and stuff, I see a lot of Rite Aids. I don't know how big they are, though. What do you guys? You guys got anything else out there and out west, or is it just CVS and Walgreens?
Well, grocery stores in Utah—they have their own pharmacies. Like we go to the Fresh Market, just on the street from where I work. That's where we do our pharmacy business. So grocery stores do have pharmacies out in Utah. I think Illinois is different, right?
Well,
Illinois is just a different.
Well, the big stores might. I mean, Jewel still has the.
Jewel still has pharmacy.
Yeah, they don't call it Osco. They still.
Yeah, Jewel has pharmacy. You said Mariano's, they do. So yeah, some of the grocery stores here do, but not all of them.
Yeah.
But none of them. Nothing competes with CVS and Walgreens just because they're literally at every
in terms
corner.
Of market share. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got the pharmacy benefit manager, which drives people there to get the price right. And some insurance companies require you go to one or the other. I think if you sign up for some of the Medicare stuff, you got to go to one place, right? Or you're supposed to?
Oh yeah, these companies are probably lobbying for exclusive commerce rights, right?
Yes, I mean it's a very. I mean, as Lou says, that's a fascist model. It's it's three or four.
Well, the Nazis said, they wanted to snuff out small businesses because it's kind of trying to regulate and manage a bunch of small businesses is like trying to herd 1,000 chickens.
Yeah.
And their model was, we're going to have like 3 or 4 big corporations, and we can move them. It's like a Titanic versus a bunch of little speedboats. You can push the Titanic through the water. You can manage that as the head of state. That's much easier to manage than 1,000 chickens, right? 1,000 chickens is the Austrian model, right?
Yeah.
All going in different directions. But, man, an authoritarian state, they want few large corporations.
But
they want majority of the commerce going through these corporations.
But after the break, I think let's talk a little bit about when you do that and you don't let little people pop up, guess what? You end up with supply chain interruptions, and guess what we have, right?
Yeah.
SP Futures down 22.
I think you're also going to get less innovation, too.
Well, yeah. That's a big...
Less disruption, less innovation.
Isn't that the job of big drug companies now? They find out who's got innovation, they buy the little one?
Yeah. SP Futures. You don't want to start it. You want to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You want to buy their customers.
SP Futures down 23. NASDAQ Futures down 77. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Weber on the board. NASDAQ futures down 25, NASDAQ futures down on 96. We just dropped again here. We had been down 20 and sitting there for a while. Now we're down 26 pretty quick. Individual stocks moving. Home Depot on earnings down 12 bucks, actually 12.31, trading 3.22. They were up yesterday. Walmart, which had actually very good earnings, and they were down 2 bucks. They're now only down 2 cents, so they're coming back up here. So I'm going to say maybe they'll go positive here. But right now I have every stock that's trading in the Dow, which means everything, but 3M's the only one that hasn't really opened pre-market yet. Every one of them is in the red, so there's nothing there that's positive. Same way over with the transportation average, even though maybe they're only half open. Dow down 211. We've got, over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 98.4%. Shanghai down 70, that's 2%. Hang Seng down 435, that's 1.7%. Hang Seng was down yesterday as well. China internet shares fall as regulatory fears resurface, as they say. So that's the headline over there. Who knows if that's the reason or not. We're in Europe, the DAX only down 31.2%. FTSE's up 6, that's 0.1%. CAC around down 39.6. Now those guys didn't bounce back yesterday like we did, so we got a little bit of a timing change, on this one. So take that with a grain of salt. Yesterday, Dow actually ended up 110 after being down over 200. S&P's was up 11 after being down 25. NASDAQ finished down 29, but it was down a lot more than that. We've got bonds down only one basis point now, 1.24. The Bund minus one basis point as well to minus 0.49. Japan minus one basis point to positive 0.01, so right at the zero number. Oil, whack again, was down 2%, over 2% yesterday, down another percent today, on 61 cents to 66.68. Brent down 50 cents, 69.01. Natural gas down a penny, 3.93. It had been up to like 4.12, 4.15, which is pretty high for that in the summertime, but it's coming back down here. Gold, was up early, it's still up some. 4.490 was up like 6.50, 17.94, trying to break through 1800. Silver up 9 cents, 23.88. Copper down 8 cents, 4.24. Last but not least, our favorite Bitcoin crypto up 557 to 46,819. Maddie, I think I'm going to have to ask get Carl's opinion on his crypto when we come back. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have one crash in the area right now on the expressways, and that's on I-88, the Reagan Memorial outbound side. Just before you approach I-355, there's a crash blocking the right lane out in the western suburbs. This is causing some congestion as folks are heading out west on 88, so keep that in mind. No issues on the inbound side. Further into the city, Eden's looking good. Kennedy traffic building steadily, but nothing out of the norm. Eisenhower is probably our slowest moving expressway, although there's no accident, just a lot of traffic volume. Stevenson, traffic building as well, but normal traffic times down there. Southside expressways are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Roselle Road and Turner Avenue. And then northwest of there in Elgin, there's a malfunctioning traffic light at Big Timber Road and Illinois 31 that's causing some congestion. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another beautiful mid-August day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 80. Right now it's crystal clear and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 98 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 76. In sports, White Sox beat Oakland last night, rallying back from a 2-0 deficit to top the A's 5-2. Cubs were blown out in Cincinnati, losing 14-5 to the Reds. Diamondbacks were off. They're back in action tonight as the Phillies come to town. That game will get started at 6:40 Arizona time. Chief.
Mr. Professor, what do you think of his retail sales number down 1.1% in July versus a 0.3% drop expected?
Well, it's more of the same. I mean, there's these fears that the Delta variant's going to result in lockdowns. I think people are scaling back. It'd be interesting to drill down further in the data and find out what people are buying. The last time I went to Walmart, things that were in high demand during the first part of the pandemic were missing from the shelves, from what I noticed. You know, in Utah, I just checked this out. In Utah, the unemployment rate is down to 2.8%. In New York, Illinois, and California, I think it's well above 7.5.
Well, when you say the unemployment rate, I'm going to be technical. Before I do that, I have a question regarding these retail sales. Are these things inflation adjusted?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure about that. I don't think, maybe they're not, I don't know. You know, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah.
When people on the news programs are talking about percent changes, I'm asking the question, well, is that year over year, or is that month to month, or is that week to week? You know, when you watch in the stock market shows on CNBC and Fox Business Network, it's usually day to day, right?
Right.
But a lot of times when they spit out these percent changes, they never say whether it's year over year or month to month or week to week or day to day. They never say that. So it's kind of hard to tell.
Well, you really right? don't want to make.
I would think, you know, if you want people to tune into your news program, you want it to be, you know, really bad news or really good news. You want to over exaggerate it. So I would suspect maybe it's not inflation adjusted, but I think, I'm not sure.
So, you know, could we have a was Goodhart's law was if an economics index or whatever was became a target, it ceased to have any value to be an index, right, Matty? Something like that?
Yeah, essentially. If you already pick out your target before you run your study, then your target loses its value.
Oh, yeah. That happens with unemployment studies, too, national unemployment studies. I think Thomas Sowell pointed that out. He called it Russian roulette, that famous Kardon-Kruger unemployment study of Pennsylvania and New Jersey fast food restaurants. They went in after the fact and interviewed the survivors of the minimum wage hike. I think it was in New Jersey relative to Pennsylvania. And, of course, the survivors, you know, after the fact, are going to have more employment because the competitors who couldn't pay the minimum wage hike, they're out of business. So that means there's fewer competitors, and so the ones that survive are bigger. And that was one of the problems with that Kardon-Kruger study.
Well, what I guess the question is, if you have a news show that's over 20 minutes, does it cease to be news? Because now you're worried more about ratings.
With the internet, I think with the internet and the ability to people download news instantaneously on their phones.
Well, but
that's all I do when I'm waiting in the when I'm waiting in the doctor's office. All I'm doing is I'm scrolling through news stories on left-wing, right-wing news websites.
Well, and none of it's news. If you read 15 articles and you get the same number that comes up in 12 of them, you probably can believe that number.
Yeah,
it's about the only thing you can believe. But I just think that they're blowing these numbers past people so fast that they don't even. I mean,
I honestly don't think the journalists know or care, really. I don't think they really. I mean, if they really cared, they'd tell you if it's a year over year percent change. They'd tell you if it's a day to day percent change. But they don't tell you that.
Well, you sound
they either don't know because maybe they didn't get very good training in their stats classes as an undergrad.
You know who you sound like now?
They're just not concerned by it, right?
You know who you sound like now?
Who?
Cheryl Atkinson. You sound just like her, which is not a bad thing, by the way. Her point is that the people that are in the news that are writing the stories have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
I don't think they do, honestly. And the people that you see who are speaking are really just reading copy, and you can just tell that they're reading copy because you just watch their eyes. Some of them are really good at disguising their eye movements by moving their head around. But the ones that aren't very skilled at moving their head around while they're reading the copy, you can see their eyes going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. They're just reading the copy. It's like that movie with Bruce Almighty. Read the copy, Evan. Read the copy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're our friend, Maria Bartiromo, who's one of the originals on the New York
Times. Oh, I think she's good. I really think she's good.
Well, you know, when she first went down to the New York floor, when things were not, as we say, politically correct as they are now, you know, there was no feed for her. So
yeah.
they would have a guy run out and he'd jam the piece of paper in her hand that they wanted her to read next. Well, they would just have random guys, runners, run out and jam something in her hand. And some of it might be like what the guy wanted to do to her without any clothes. And she'd like look at it and like start to read it and then like toss it to the ground. All pissed off.
Oh, man.
But she, you know what? But she was from Jersey. She's a tough lady. Didn't bother her.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she hung right in there. I mean, I met her at one of the option things.
I can imagine she writes her own copy and she does her homework. That's one of the ones that I really admire is Maria.
I actually met her out at the swimming pool.
Yeah.
And I was I didn't look like I do now, so I looked okay in a bathing suit. And she was in a bikini and she looked very nice too. So I mean,
weren't wearing your man's ear?
Oh no, I wasn't. There wasn't no thongs, nothing like that. It was just regular old. But this had to be 1990 something, when she first started. But she's an attractive lady. I mean, very pleasant. I mean,
well, even to this day.
Yeah.
I find her very attractive. Yeah.
I mean,
she hasn't done any surgeries.
No. You talk to her. You're talking to some girl from Jersey. Just happened to know a lot about finance. I mean, it wasn't like she was, that she was better than anybody else at all. I was very impressed. I mean, whatever. But I wonder how much. I mean, you're. When you teach class, and I don't know, I got the same kind of wacky mentality. You want people to really understand what it is they're talking about when they say stuff. And I appreciate that these people that are on TV have some talent, but I really think Kelly Evans is really pretty good too. And I don't know, she's got a couple of kids. I think she's just a sweet lady. I mean, John says she's really one of the best. But when you say stuff like, is the inflation this month, does it mean it's transitory? Well, you and I, Hal, I think know. Matter of fact, I know you know.
It's not transitory.
But if your used car price say your used cars are, pick a number, it's 1% of the basket, okay, and they double in a month, which they damn near have.
Yeah.
Well, now, the next month, maybe if you're quick like a bunny, which I don't think they even care about, it's now going to become probably 2% of the basket. But I don't think they adjust them monthly or even quickly. So then the next month, if it's flat, they're going to say there's no inflation. But they still never picked up the doubling of the month before. So you never.
Yeah.
That's why I push back at you and all the rest of the people who talk about this, people being, staying at home, and getting the unemployment rate and not going back to work. I mean, I don't disagree that that's happening. I mean, I know a couple of people that are doing it. But what I'm saying is at some point when you have a 20 or 25-year span, for whatever reason, you've got prices motoring along, in the health insurance, in the housing, and all. And you have a I'm going to say, this is an awful term, you have an underclass that works for $10 an hour. It probably doesn't even have any insurance because they can't afford it. Probably doesn't have a house because they can't afford it, living with relatives or something. And those people, after a 20-year span, have gone up like from $10 to $12. Meanwhile, the omelet that they're making has gone from $6 to $12. You almost need, you can't even do it percentage-wise. You almost need those guys to come in with like a 2.5 times the salary of last week just to get even. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what the economic term for that is or. But I see that all over the place. I mean, I mentioned this guys last week, so second story probably, but Audrey and I went to this Thai place, and we love the people. Our lady runs the place. She was out that morning, buys everything. So the food's delicious. And her husband works there, and he tells me he had a cook quit. And I'm going, okay. Now, they haven't raised their prices that much, but a little bit. And so I didn't want to ask him what he was paying. I mean, I'm not that much of a knothead, even though I'm a little bit of one. But I was hoping he'd tell me, and sure enough, out he comes. Well, he was making $12. We raised him to like 16, and I'm thinking, Jesus, keep that button closed because you don't want your heart propping out of your chest. But I have to believe that from the time he started to now, the price has gone from, you know, $11 for the average dinner to $15. He probably does 30 of them an hour. So that's $150, and they're going to raise the guy $4, and they think they're doing him a favor. I mean, we're not even close to reality here, Hal. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, the problem with comparing classes of people is that people move in and out of those classes. Over a 20-year period of time, for example, my brother Ryan, 20 years ago, was bouncing from job to job. In between that time period, well, 25 years ago, in between that time period, he found a job at the largest bullet manufacturer in the world in Lewiston, Idaho. I think that's what he says. I think maybe recreational, not military, whatever. But there's a factory that manufactures bullets in Lewiston, Idaho. And he's been at that company for 20 years. And his income between him and his wife has gone up substantially. So when you look at the individuals, the individuals aren't trapped in these income brackets, right? You start out, you know, if you like us, you start really poor and you kind of bounce around from job to job until you find your thing, and then you matriculate through a company over a 20-year period of time, and he's done really well for himself.
Well, good
right?
for him, yeah.
20 years ago, he was struggling to find enough money to feed him and his son, right? But now he's got RVs and quad runners. So he's doing really well. So in the last year, though, the last year with all this inflation we've had, it's really punished the people in those income that are, you know, in the short run, you're trapped in that quintile or that quartile. You're trapped in that income quartile, that bottom quartile. You're trapped there. So it's really punishing on them. But over a 20-year period of time, I think you have to be really careful with comparing quartiles to quartiles. Because in the last 20 years, there are things that have become really inexpensive, right?
Well, but I'm just going to lob one out there. And again, this is off the top of my head. I'm going to say if you were making $10 an hour last March, when COVID shut things down, if the guy doesn't call you back and say, I'm giving you 18 or 20, you're not even.
Oh, no, you're not. No, yeah. There's no reason for it, right? Because
yeah.
You can make more. You can make more by being idle.
Well,
right?
I'm not even talking about that. I'm just saying that it's like the what is Kevin's phrase? It takes forever to get there, then it happens all of a sudden. You know, type of thing. I mean, now we're just telling people, hey, $10 an hour. Don't even call me. I can't even get to work for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's
well. I mean, but if it wasn't. I mean, people have a choice. They can be idle or they can work. Right. And right now, the wage to work is lower than the wage to be idle. So people are choosing to be idle. If it wasn't for that choice, that second choice of being idle, they would have to return to work,
see,
right?
In this
and
area,
that's one of the intended consequences of these checks, of these unemployment benefits, is to force employers to pay a higher wage to suck people back in the labor market.
Well, I think actually depends. This in Chicago, I wish I could put my hands on it, but if you were here, you study this stuff more for a living than I do. But I think a lot of stuff's happened here. You know, it's not just guys getting this check from the government. I think people have left.
They're coming to places like Utah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that.
All you got to do is look at the U-Haul parking lots, right? You go to the U-Haul parking lot, and if your U-Haul parking lot doesn't have any trucks and trailers, people are leaving the state. And if your U-Haul, local U-Haul has a bunch of trailers and trucks, that means people are coming to that state.
Well,
you know,
that was. My first job out of college was at Allied Van Lines, of all places, because they wanted somebody to go around to. I was always a small business kind of guy. Well, what a screw up that was, lifetime. I should have just got a job at a big bank and sat through 5 mergers, and now I'd be a zillionaire, right?
well, it's and buts for candy and nuts. We all have a Merry Christmas, right?
Yeah. Well, so I'd go around the country and help individual agents, you know, with their business, you know, set up their finances for them and stuff like that. But even then, and this is 1977, in the middle of the summer, all the moving vans were in Florida, California, Arizona, and Texas. I mean, it's not like this is a new phenomenon.
No.
But I mean, I think that in Chicago, the Hispanic community, which has been traditionally the, you know, in your kitchens, That's where you're going to find, you know, most of your cooks and things like that are a lot more Hispanic. I think they're just gone. They're out of the city, or maybe I think a lot went back to Mexico.
Yeah,
you can't get a job.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't wait around sitting on your brother's sofa waiting for the guy to call you back for the $10 an hour job. I mean, if there's one somewhere else, you're going to be gone.
That's one of the problems with these, comparing this income quintile to this income quintile, when those quintiles are 20 years apart. When times are good, that draws people into a country that has really low unemployment and the economy's growing well. But then when we go into recession, a lot of the people that came here, well, they'll go back, right? So there's a lot of flow in and out of the country, depending on the state of the economy.
Well, I'm going to take a shot at, the funny part that you mentioned, you gave the slight shot. Now that I'm in the middle, I can identify this. I can see clearly I'm in the political middle, Carl. Carl, sorry, Hal. Sometimes you sound like Carl a little bit. But, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I think it is.
Well, I don't like my voice. So if you like that guy's voice, then it's a compliment.
Well, I don't like mine either. So you know anybody who likes their voice? Maddie probably does. Maddie's got a great
voice.
No
one likes their own voice.
I think Glenn Beck loves his voice. I think Glenn Beck loves his voice.
Some of those guys just love to talk. I think. But where was I going with this? The idea that this money for giving everybody the PPP money and stuff. And obviously it flows through that we gave people all this money, unemployment, to not work. And the way you hit the nail, in my opinion, absolutely on the head when you started talking about people getting all this dough from government. But then you veered off into the lower end people. And I think that this particular scam has clearly, the top has benefited, not the middle. I mean, in Illinois, we had 656,000 firms got money, and for a total of $38 billion. And as far as I can see, I can go through the list, name some restaurants in Chicago you've probably been in, and I can tell you, well, I can't off the top of my head, but I go back and find them, because there's a big internet site with everybody on there. The only thing about the restaurants is that some of them have, it could be, Char Steakhouse, but it's actually Hal's Steak. So you can't match the names up with the place. But some of them are just the regular names. I'm going to say that most of these people got money to keep these people employed. So why would they have to go out and hire them anyway? Because the way I look at this money coming to a place, there's no, let's say, for instance, we didn't, by the way, that PTI Securities, because we didn't lay anybody off or anything, but if we had 100 people working here, there was no discipline in there. Say we got $5 million, like some law firms did, and other people here in the city, which is pretty absurd to me. But say we did. Now, in order to get that forgiven, I think my brother knows better than me, but I think he had to pay 80 or 85% of it out in salary, something along those lines. It didn't say that you had to retain people and parcel it out the way it was before. I could have told 200 people to don't let the door hit them in the ass and given myself a raise.
Yeah.
So the idea that somebody who got $500,000 from the government to keep people on as employed, and they come on TV whining they can't hire people, I'm like, wait a minute. We just gave you the money to keep them. What do you got to hire anybody for anyway?
This is the problem with this whole, government handout.
Yeah.
Just giving people money is, some businesses are going to say, oh, if I pay 80% in salary, I don't have to pay it back. Well, they're going to make that calculation. Am I going to get caught? And so they might pay themselves out if their spouse or a friend or a brother works with them, or other sibling works with them. They might give those people this huge increase in pay and not give it to the people at the low end
right. And there's no.
And is the government going to come in there and police that?
No, not whatsoever. As long as it's salary, they don't say, give me a list of all your people the month before and give me a list 6 months later and prove to me that you gave all those people 80% of their salary. They kept them out.
Government officials aren't that stupid.
No.
They know that it's set up in a way that's probably going to happen.
Sure.
Right? They're not that stupid.
Well,
they don't care because it's helicopter money.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's but it really if you
they couldn't care less.
But if it helicopters more toward your supporters, that's even better.
Of course.
Well, and the greediest person is going to gobble up most of that money too. They're going to go around with their vacuum cleaner and suck it up.
But the thing that I find somewhat amusing is that both sides blame the other. This was a bipartisan. I mean, it's not like the Republican guys didn't do well by this bill as
exactly,
well.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. The lower end Democratic voter.
The bill was a Republican bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, there've been a few iterations.
Well, there have been since, but I mean, it was a 100% Republican bill in the beginning.
Exactly.
And 75% of the money went to the top, not the bottom. And,
yeah, I'm not accusing Republicans of being a free market.
Oh God, no.
Man, not at all. Yeah, they speak of free markets, but I think they want free markets in terms of the resources that they purchase, right? But they don't want free markets in terms of the things they sell. They want government protections.
So are Maddie and I still welcome in your class?
Oh yeah, definitely. Everybody's welcome. Come on down.
Would you prefer us in the back row or the front row raising our hand?
Well, I think we'd need you in the front row because everybody sits in the back row.
No, I'd go in and I'd get there early and I'd muscle one of those guys out and I'd say, who the hell is this guy?
You have to sit in the front row. You know?
I never didn't sit in the back seat ever all through college. I mean, I did. That was my. I got there early.
I always sit in the front row, man. I was always asking questions.
Oh God, that's why people are in the back row with the Bics and the little wadded up pieces of paper to wing them at you. Take care, somebody. And, thank you very much. S&P futures down 20. Nasdaq futures down 85. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.